It seems to me, Adolf, that there have been a lot of stories in the papers recently about people who have left rather large amounts of money to their pet animals.
Yes, I've noticed that too. If this keeps up, we're certainly going to have a lot of wealthy cats and dogs in this country. Now, how does the government collect income tax from a cocker spaniel who has been left a fortune?
While we're being silly, it seems to me it'd be an even harder job collecting from a Great Dane. But I'm always curious about people who leave unusual bequests.
My dear, you'll find the court records of the land are filled with strange and fantastic legacies.
Some of those strange legacies you mentioned, Adolf, must have been quite confusing to the administrators who settled the estates.
Well, dear, some of them are so odd and so peculiar that I wonder how an administrator could go into court to have them administered. Take the case of a woman in England who left £200 a year to her pet parrot. Now, I'm all for taking care of animals after a person has passed on, particularly a parrot or pet dogs or animals of that kind, whom one holds very, very dear. But £200 a year, at that time, that was $20 a week. What on earth could a parrot do with $20 a week?
Yeah, maybe he was a very hungry parrot and needed a lot of seed. I don't know.
Well, now you're joking about it.
Well, it was her parrot. Why shouldn't she be able to leave the money if she wanted it that way?
Take the case of Mrs. Lewis Oldham of Oklahoma City, who willed to her two daughters my sunny disposition and my sense of fairness. Now you try to execute that one. Or Francis Reginald Lord of Australia, who left his widow £1 for tram fare to any place where she could go drown herself.
Oh, well, he was a horrible man. No, I have no patience with that. But on the other hand, you see, now just to offset that, you have, during the American Revolution, the statesman, Gouverneur Morris. And when he passed on, he left his widow a very large fortune and also provided in the will that if she remarried, she was to get twice the sum of money. Now, I think that's perfect.
I do, too, because so many men leave the provision in their wills that if their wives remarry, they're to get nothing.
You know, that's something just for a moment that I do not understand. I think that is something very strange in a person's nature. Why should anyone want to be that unkind or that cruel, that if they had that feeling that if they should pass on, that they would not want the other to be fortunate enough to meet someone as a companion? I don't understand such selfishness.
I don't either, but then they do it, and it happens every day.
And then you see the woman or the man has to make the decision, well, if I remarry, then I will lose the money. Then they have that problem. Oh, I think that's a very unkind. They have
no
patience with that.
Just at this point, I think it's very important that every person, I don't care who he is and how little he leaves, should leave a properly executed will, if he can possibly afford it, to have an attorney aid him in it, and if he cannot, for him to look up the laws of his own state to be sure that he is leaving the money where he wants it to go and in the proper form.
But getting back to some of these strange legacies, there really have been some rather amusing and odd things that people have left. For example, Robert Louis Stevenson left he willed his birthday, actually his birthday, to a friend who complained that hers fell on Christmas Day. But, and he also said, if she did not use it properly, that all rights passed to the President of the United States. I don't quite know what he meant by that.
No, that's a rather sweet gesture. I don't think that's a valid will.
Well, it was in his will.
It was in it, but how on earth could you execute it? You couldn't pass that on to anyone. Well, one of the things that always interests me is a man works very hard all his life for money, and leaves his money with express provisions, bequests in his will that he wants carried out. He wants them done in a certain way. And yet, that will can be upset.
Yes, and I don't understand that. You're right. Mm-hmm.
Well, it happens all the time. We see now a man, for example, has been living a quiet life, let's say, and probably loathes his relatives. They probably have been very unkind to him, so he decides to leave his money in any other way that he pleases. He leaves it to his dogs, his cats, his parrots, anything he wants. The first thing you know, here's a relative who hates him, who has never liked him, comes into court and is able to upset that will and divert it from the path which the man who had worked for the money had indicated. How do you explain that?
Well, yes, but just a moment, Adolf. I mean, a person, normally speaking, a person who leaves a large sum of money to a pet animal, that is questionable. You are all inclined to say, well, now, that seems a little bit overboard, when it could be left to someone that might be good for a human being. But on the other hand, let us take the case of a man or a woman who leaves in their will their worldly possessions to someone who has been kind and good to them, who is not a blood relative. Now, there you have the point that I don't understand. The blood relatives can suddenly appear from nowhere. Maybe he hasn't heard from them in 20 years, and they can contest the will, and the chances are that because they're blood relatives, they will get something.
Yes, I didn't mean to bring up the point of animals in this particular case. I meant any provision that a man wanted, such as you say. a person or who has nursed a man in his last illness. He hasn't heard from the relatives and they've
been
living, abroad, maybe, let's say, in Ireland or Spain or China or somewhere.
Yes. Then you have the case, you know, of the millionaire Andrew Freeman, who left all of his money for really, I think, a wonderful purpose. He set up a home only for poor millionaires. Now, that sounds rather silly, I suppose, but his principle, I think, was wonderful. He simply said, it is bad enough to be poor in one's old age, but it is much worse to have been rich once and then to be poor.
Oh, I think that's beautiful. And what about Percy Williams, who made millions and millions of dollars out of vaudeville, you see, and left the Percy Williams home on Long Island, and he even left a provision that these actors who went there to live in there when they had leaner days, could have the finest of cigars, which they had been accustomed to. There's money laid aside for them to come into New York to see plays, to get good seats, and smoke the best of cigars. I think that is a wonderful thing.
I think it
thing.
Is marvelous. Yes, I must admit that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose, dear, that some of the greatest legacies that have been left to the world haven't even been mentioned in a will.
Well, I'm not quite sure that I follow you, dear.
Well, I mean great paintings, great literature, great music.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I believe that those should be classed as heritages. They are left to all people. Like inspiring music, they live forever.
Inspiring music, yes. But what about jazz and swing and bebop? Do you imagine future generations will consider these a great heritage?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, dear, but in the present day, they seem to have their place. Suppose we look into these so-called modern music forms after we hear what someone else has to say on a different subject.
Well, I'm not sure, Verie, that I'm qualified to talk about these modern music forms as ragtime, blues, boogie, jazz, bebop. About 1911, when Irving Berlin first came into popular favor, and I must say that he's still in popular favor, and he wrote Alexander's Ragtime Band, I began to take a great interest in that type music. And I know what I like and I know what I don't like. I don't know much about the music, but
what do you like, dear?
Well, I like things like the Beale Street Blues, the Basin Street Blues, Limehouse Blues, Way Down Yonder in New Orleans, St. Louis Blues, Frankie and Johnny, Sweet Georgia Brown, Some of These Days. I like the melody of those pieces, and I like them played, well, yes, I like them played in a sort of a jazz or ragtime fashion, as I call it. Bebop, I don't know about bebop.
Well, darling,
I'm not mad about boogie.
Well, you've picked the one thing, of course, bebop, that only really musicians understand thoroughly. I don't know very much about bebop either. I do like it, oddly enough. I think it's interesting. I find it very, very interesting. To me, it's slightly primitive. It doesn't seem quite as modern as I know it's supposed to be. But let's go back a little. Let's take, shall we say, the birth of the blues and how they originated.
Yeah.
As you probably know, it originally started in the South with the Negroes, and it was... originally, the blues was sung without accompaniment. Mm-hmm. It was simply the Negro's feeling of putting his words and his emotions into his song.
Mm-hmm.
And then to that, they added their instruments. But actually, the instruments were simply reproducing the inflections of the song that he'd been singing. Do you recall when we were in, I think it was Richmond, Virginia, the little group of Negro boys that were on the street corner that were so wonderful.
That's right.
That were singing, and they had a dishpan and a spoon. That was the only music they had, and I think a washboard with some thimbles or something.
That's right.
Of their own.
I remember.
And they would sing anything you asked them to, but they would do it in their own way, and it was wonderful. They have so much rhythm and spirit.
Well, tell me this. How is it, then, that the Europeans, particularly the French, appreciated our Dixieland music, so-called New Orleans and Memphis, now music from the South, before we did? And even now they appreciate our bebop more than we do here.
Well, that I don't know. Is that true?
Well,
I don't understand that exactly.
I heard that, yes. I
think they
that.
Like it, but I don't know whether they like it better than we do. But you mentioned jazz in this now. Well, of course, jazz really started in New Orleans. And the word jazz is a Creole expression meaning to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, in my humble opinion, and I don't profess to be an expert, and probably anyone who happens to be listening that is may correct me on some of these things, and also you.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that it is really, you take jazz, and you take swing, and you take boogie-woogie and all of those things, it really amounts to interpretation more than anything else. Because you know perfectly well that if you get some very good musicians together, and they have a jam session, they'll play anything you ask them to, but goodness knows what'll come out. It'll just be how they feel for the moment.
Well, I like to hear the melody. I don't like the melody to be drowned in all sorts of weird notes and sounds.
That's
right. I want the melody to come through.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't appreciate the music. And I like rhythm. Now, of course, Boogie Woogie has rhythm, but I'm not mad about Boogie Woogie. I'm getting awfully tired of it. There's an awful lot of left hand in it that drowns out everything else and all the melody, and it leaves me a little bit cold.
Well, I find it interesting, you see. I remember, of course, getting back to jazz, I knew Paul Whiteman quite well, and I remember when he first started. And incidentally, that's another interesting thing I find, that you take the early jazz of, say, the 20s, mm-hmm. the way it was played then, and the way it is played now and still called jazz is something quite different. In other words, I think that as we go on in time, even though they call them the same things, why, it'll change with the time.
Who changes it?
The player, the musician.
How or why do they change?
In their interpretation, that's all it amounts to.
Can there be that many interpretations?
Will it not
go back to the original sometime?
I don't see what they would gain by going back to the original.
Well, I don't. I'm just wondering how many possible ways are there of playing music? How many?
Well, now you have some. You have today. You have some orchestras that go in for what they call Lombardo is one who plays a suite music.
Yes,
now,
I like
he
that.
Takes all of the same numbers that any of these jazz orchestras or bebop or swing orchestras would take, and he plays it in a different key, in a different method, in a different feeling for it.
Yes.
But it's still the same music.
Yes.
And it's simply a question of interpretation, and, well, it's what you like.
Well, I'm not sure, Varee, that even if I understood all these musical terms, I'd be able to appreciate it any better. Well, once again, we seem to have reached the end of our time. This is Adolphe Manjou speaking from Beverly Hills.
And this is Varee Teasdale Manjou thanking you for inviting us into your home, and hoping we may call again soon.